Have you ever thought about learning to play the piano? It sounds hard, right? PianoPicnic.com makes learning the piano simple and fun. You can learn at your own pace and you don't need to learn to read sheet music. Besides, there's loads of boring guitar bands out there. Cool bands need cool keys. Rock out with your keyboard at PianoPicnic.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Musician's Map podcast. Episodes have been few and far between recently, which is a result of me spending most of my time working on podcasts for other people. Get in touch with me over at overnightaudio.net if you want to know more about that. The result being that I don't have as much time as I'd like to create Musician's Map. If you think this just isn't good enough, or you want to hear more episodes, make sure to leave a rating or review on whichever platform you're listening to this podcast. You can also support the podcast directly by purchasing a copy of the ebook or audiobook available at musiciansmap.org, Amazon, and Audible. And maybe the best thing you could do to help me make more episodes is to share this episode. Today on the podcast, I'm talking to Alex Fitzpatrick from UK hardcore label Holy Roar Records. Holy Roar are one of my favorite labels. They have loads of incredible bands and have a DIY, down-to-earth ethos that I think a lot of us can really relate to. If you've ever thought about signing to a label, how they work and what they do, this episode is for you. There's just so much good info in here. I'm not going to list it all, so let's just dive right in.
Holy Roar sort of like became a formal idea or a thing in January 2006. Our first release came out July 2006, because obviously we had no clue what we were doing. So it took a little while to get from A to B as such. But my background before that was I grew up in the countryside, did nothing apart from like listen to CDs and just like fuck around on guitar and bass with my friends. But when I went to university in Birmingham, which is in the Midlands, I sort of discovered that I could do a lot more with music. I started a music website, a webzine, which, you know, they still exist, obviously, but they were definitely more sort of, I felt like they were more popular back then. Mm. And I started putting on loads of shows. And then through that, you know, we would put on all these shows and there would be like local bands supporting like touring bands, of course. And me and the people I was kicking around with back then just decided to start trying to release some of these local bands. So that kind of gave me the bug. And then after university, about a year after university, so we did like three little tiny releases pre-Holy Roar. And then I moved to London with my then girlfriend, and her dad basically said, oh, would you like to have a small loan to carry on putting on shows and like do bigger and better shows? And we were like, well, we don't think we need money to do shows. We would rather have a small loan and start a record label properly, because we were both working jobs that we sort of were paying the bills, but probably weren't our sort of like forever, ever jobs, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So he very, very kindly loaned us £8,000. And we very quickly squandered half of that on things that you didn't need to spend money on. And that was pretty much how Holy Roar began.
Who were your first few bands?
We psychotically, and maybe somewhat in an unhinged manner, decided to do three releases to start the label rather than just one. And that's such a risk, and I would not recommend that. But retrospectively, it was actually like a saving grace, because we did the first CD EP by Rollo Tomassi. We did an album, although it was like 12 minutes long or 13 minutes, by a band called Phoenix Bodies from Indianapolis. And then we did a split 12-inch between KO Dot and Bloody Panda. And they were sort of like avant-garde US doom bands, basically.
Yeah.
I believe KO Dot is still actually going. I don't think Bloody Panda are. But yeah, the reason I say it was like retrospectively, it was a saving grace, is because if we'd done one, if we put all our eggs in one basket, there was obviously a far higher sort of risk associated with that. So weirdly, it was the KO Dot Bloody Panda 12-inch that sort of sold quite a lot straight away. And then Rollo Tomassi sort of gathered pace and sort of gathered steam and started to sell more as it went along, whereas the Phoenix Bodies record kind of didn't do very well at all.
Yeah.
But oddly, you know, I still stand by that Phoenix Bodies record, like, all this time later. But yeah, so, you know, we only did those three releases because we had the money to do so due to that loan. But yeah, it was a big, big gamble for sure, especially on such weird music.
Yeah.
You know, or weird music to the wider world.
Yeah,
do you know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I mean?
Totally. And so at that point, were you funding the recording of those EPs and albums?
No. We paid for the pressing, so the manufacture, and then we paid for PR, promo CDs, advertising, and then, you know, bits and bobs around that, basically. Yeah.
What would you say Holy Raw is about for people who haven't come across the label before?
Its essence is a sort of a progressive, in the true sense of the word, heavy music label. But that's getting ever more like varied and broad and not vague, because I think there's a thread you can take through all our bands in terms of sort of ethos and aesthetics and sort of sensibility. But I mean, if you wanted a sort of a one-liner, it's just Holy Raw is just about trying to release literally the best music we can, released by the best people possible. We don't have any agenda, or there's no like quotas to fill. Obviously there's no discrimination, but there's no positive discrimination either. It's just we want to sort of stand back from, well, we don't want to, but we do stand back from sort of the socially minded aspects of where music is at today, and just sort of try and present as good music as possible with good messages and good people.
Yep.
We've always wanted it to be like a bunch of people, and I mean the people in the bands here and ourselves, that once you sort of key into that kind of world, you just would like to go to the pub with them.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, fair. That's cool. So what do you look for in a band when considering adding them to the Holy Raw roster, or just working with them, really?
It's a combination of factors. I mean, obviously the bottom line is the music, or that has to be the first thing. We never, ever look at a promo photo of a band and go, yeah, they're going to be great. You know, the yeah. first thing's always the music. And then you like, you obviously want to talk to them and see what they're like as people. You want to see the band live if it's geographically possible, as soon as possible. You know, check they're on the right page, they're on the same page, and just sort of like get a feel for their work ethic and their drive and their sort of, their noose of sort of self-awareness and sort of understanding of how things work a little bit. Like, you can have a band that can create the greatest music ever, but they might think that you should just play in the same town for the next year, and they think that that constitutes touring. And, you know, that shows that they haven't potentially sort of got their head screwed on in a way that we would need in order to work with them.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's a combination of factors. It starts with the music, but then we obviously want to get along with them, and we obviously want to know that they kind of know what they're doing a bit. I mean, you know, obviously we're here to help and guide that process, of course, but equally we're not tour bookers, and we're not going to put you on tour with Rollo Tomassi tomorrow just because you've signed to Holy Raw, for example.
Yeah. And is it something that you make the decision on? So do you hear a band and go, that's fucking rad, I've got to work with those guys, or I've got to meet them? Or is it something other than that? Are there other people that are sort of bring artists to you?
That happens. The former happens quite a lot. So there's four of us that work at Holy Raw in total now. Mm. And most of the time now with bands that we want to work with, we kind of all have to agree on it. So it's definitely becoming more democratic. But I'm not saying it used to be a dictatorship or something. It's just like it was me on my own for such a long time that obviously that would therefore dictate that I make the choice. But yeah, you know, the final say is mine, because it's sort of, I guess, for want of a less arrogant way of putting it, it's like my vision, or, you know, my label, and I took it to where it got to initially. Mm. But increasingly more, it's now the musical choices are reflective of all of our personalities and all of our sort of desires and wants of where we want things to go.
Yep. Awesome. What's the most common way that you actually find acts? And please don't say it's through sifting through demos that are sent to you.
It's not. I mean, 99% of those are atrocious, you know, like, I don't mean that in a sort of like, oh, I work at a record label and I'm so dismissive and hateful of all the music. It's like when you receive a demo by a guy that says he's a rapper who emigrated from Poland to Los Angeles, and then he sends you like five instrumental tracks with no rapping on, you're like essentially a hardcore label. You're like, this is just insane. What, like, why has someone done this? But most of the time, in all honesty, I'd say probably like 60 to 70% of the time is our bands recommending bands to us, or our bands going, we played with this band, you should listen to them, they were amazing and they were really good people. And so, you know, if James from Roller Tomasi or Brady from Conjurer or something says something like that to us, we respect their opinion because we know them as people. We trust their opinion as well, of course. We generally think they know what they're on about, so that's always a good starting point. But in other instances, and there are exceptions, there are like three or four bands where it has just come from demos, but there are other instances where just like a band will just start popping up into our consciousness. Sort of like you might see one of our bands tweeting at a band, or you might see like someone you respect on a podcast or on a website referring to a band that they saw supporting. And, you know, if a band's getting in all those right places, sooner or later, you're going to sort of like naturally check them out.
And is it more often that a relationship forms with a band that you have approached or that approach you?
Probably 50-50.
Yeah.
It would be very hard to like, put it this way, it doesn't in my head automatically lean one way or the other.
Sure. Yep. What are some of the main things that Holy Raw does for its artists? Without, you know, going into specific deals, what sort of are the main aspects of the record label's business that you offer to bands and artists?
I always think of Holy Raw as like a hub where there's like about 10 or 20 little sort of like lines off it to other things. So the bare bones, pull all the meat off of what we do, is to organize a release. So a time frame from when the band's recording through to after it's physically come out, through to organizing the manufacture, through to organizing the promotional campaign that goes along with that. So I'd say that that and the people that come into that, so, you know, manufacturers, PR people, distributors, those are the sort of the key people in terms of what we do. But then, you know, obviously we also just act generally as a place where our artists can sort of, not physically, well, they can physically, but they can come to us and just pretty much anything we can do to further their prospects or increase their prospects, then, you know, we are part and parcel of that. So putting them in front of the right people, getting them talking to the right people, advising them how to get a booking agent or how to get certain tours. Again, it goes back to that whole like ecosystem. There's just so many components, you know. So, you know, and just making sure that fans are treated fairly and paid when they need to be paid or when they're due to be paid. And just trying to be as good as and as fair and as transparent as we possibly can whilst trying to push our bands and consistently talk to press and radio and, you know, all through the PR people to talk to those places. We're on the phone to our distributors, you know, and emailing them every day. Again, just trying to get those records more visible on playlists, on iTunes, in record stores.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, our deals are sort of weighted in an almost 50-50 kind of way. And so I view everything as a joint venture between us and the artist. Our end of the bargain is that we've got to try as hard as possible to sell records.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. But then, you know, the flip side of that is that the band has to be willing to put itself out there in terms of touring opportunities and, you know, willing to do things that will sort of help increase their profile as well. You know, no matter what it is, within reason. Like, I don't expect them to all like go and dance down the street in giant pink rabbit suits or something, throwing CDs at people. But, you know, within reason, we sort of like, it's a joint venture and we expect our bands to work as hard as we do.
Yeah, it's really cool. Something I get all the time, and I actually got the last 2 days I've had the same message from two different people on the Facebook page. People desperate to know how they can get in front of labels, how they can get signed. It still seems like it's this golden ticket, you know, for a huge number of musicians. What kind of advice would you give to these people?
Don't try.
Yes.
Like, as in, don't try to get in front of those people, because there's a very fine line with how you should approach record labels. There's many, many ways you can do it incorrectly by, you know, sounding over eager or jumping the gun. Or, you know, I receive so many emails where they're like, we supported a band you've never heard of in a town you've never heard of. And it's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
All I care about is your music and you having your sort of like your head screwed on.
Mm.
So my honest advice to any band who sort of, or person who's thinking like that, stop thinking, how can I get noticed by a record label? How can I get in front of these people? And just actually work out how to write and record the best music possible and how to go and play the best possible shows and how to put together your own DIY tours. Just go and be great. And if you're good, those other things will fall into place and those people will come to you.
Yeah.
It's just like that sort of classic dynamic. If like a boy is far too eager on a girl, she's going to run a mile. Do you get the sort of the bizarre analogy I'm sort of making?
Yep, totally.
Like, you know, if you're an employer and then a candidate comes in and they're like, oh, I really want to work for Subway, please. You know, you're going to be like, you're insane. Like, please, no, I'm not going to employ you, you know?
Sure.
It can obviously swing too much the other way. You can obviously sit there and do absolutely nothing. Like, you could have recorded the greatest song ever and put it on SoundCloud, but you've got to do something. You've got to like promote and push yourself somehow. You've got to get out there.
Mm.
But it's that pendulum between being like crazy desperate and lacking self-awareness and not even knowing how to like string together a bunch of shows for yourself and who to talk to, or working out who to talk to, like who's the local promoter that put on Converge the last time they came in, and was there one local slot going at the you know, to open that show?
Yep.
How do I get onto one of his shows so that I could be considered for one of his bigger shows? You know, you've got to try, you've got to do those things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't just sit there and do nothing and just expect the world to come to you. So it's kind of like, it's trying to have that sort of midpoint.
Yeah. That was such gold. What you were saying before about shifting records, about that's the bottom line is you guys need to shift loads of records.
Yeah.
You're talking physical records.
I'm talking both. I'm talking anything that's monetized.
Sweet.
Funnily enough, like about 6-9 months ago, we actually had like all of our financial data dissected by another company, and our income is 50% physical and 50% digital.
Have you noticed a trend heading back towards physical at all?
It's really, really hard for me to answer that, because time obviously continues along, as far as we know, straight line, right?
Yeah.
You know, as in a linear path, and we have grown on that. So if you imagine this like weird graph in front of you, right? Time's just going from A to B. We're growing as a label, and as we grow, we're selling more physically, but I couldn't go, oh, that therefore means there's a swing more to physical. It could mean that, for example, we're selling more CDs now than we were 2 years ago by a long shot.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
But is that because we're reaching a different type of customer, a different type of music fan? Are we becoming a label that's pushed through a little bit of a virtual glass ceiling and is reaching a CD customer?
Yeah.
You know, or are people buying more CDs again? So I can't really sort of give sort of like a stamp of authority answer on that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
We run a subscription system where you can sign up and you can stay with us for as long or as short time as you want. And basically you get sent a new release every month, be that digital, CD or vinyl. And I mean, obviously that has grown quite a lot. And so that makes me go, okay, we are making more vinyl now, and we're not making more CDs really, apart from in rare cases, they're just hanging around less. But yeah, we are definitely making more vinyl.
Yep.
But again, I don't know whether that's just a growth in physical as a sector or whether it's the growth of the label.
Yeah, sure. How do you listen to music? What medium?
Good question. I use Apple Music a lot, to be honest. I kind of almost like hate to admit this. So basically, where I'm sat right now, there's like a wall of CDs and a wall of vinyl next to me. But due to knowing that I'm going to move house within the next couple of years, and due to literally a lack of space on those walls, I've stopped buying things physically.
Yeah.
Which just sounds atrocious because, you know, I know what Holy Roar is and I know what we do. I mean, but I haven't physically bought many records lately. But I'll counteract that and I'll balance that out by saying that the other three who work at Holy Roar have almost like sort of just stepped into that void, and they're all like psychotic, like vinyl nerds.
Yeah.
So you know, it's funny, you know, they're employed by Holy Roar and they get paid by Holy Roar, and then they just like pump their money back into music anyway.
Good. So. What do you think about digital downloads and bands selling a digital download? It's just sort of struck me as a strange option that bands are offering, because I don't really know anyone that would download that music and then load it into iTunes and then load it into an iPod, or do you know what I'm saying?
I do, but they exist, believe me. Yeah. Being on my side of the fence.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. Like, it's almost like, are digital downloads like the new CDs? If you know what I mean, like, are they now the redundant format? Because surely, like, you can either stream stuff or you want to physically own it.
That's
so
it.
What's the point of it just taking up some space on your hard drive instead?
Yeah.
But there's still, honestly, by the emails we get as a label, there's still people out there that are obsessive about sound quality of digital. And so, you know, streaming is inevitably compressed quite a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's clever and it doesn't sound like crap, but there's people out there, like, the picture I get of it in my head is the same people who like really care about the performance of their computer and really care about technology in general, probably care about graphics cards for their PCs, for their game or their online gaming experience, also seem to care about audio quality of digital.
Sure.
So they've invested a lot into, inverted commas, the digital realm. That seems to be a sort of a thing for a certain type of customer. They are niche. They are very niche now. Like, whereas 5 years ago, everyone would download MP3s because streaming basically didn't exist. You know, most of those people have migrated onto streaming, but there is definitely a niche. It's almost like what vinyl was like 20 years ago or something.
Yeah.
To be honest, I want to caveat here and say I'm not really talking about people that just might buy it off iTunes because they haven't figured out what streaming is yet. I'm more talking about the people who want WAVs and FLAC and stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't really think about it like that. I always, if I want to get the record, I'll probably buy the vinyl, and because I don't have a CD player anymore. And then I'll stream it when I don't want to listen to my vinyl or when I'm out, you know.
Yeah. But then, like, you know, honestly, we've sincerely had emails where it's like, I don't want to buy the CD and rip the CD, because then what am I going to do with the CD? And I've either just clogged up my room, or it's just environmentally pointless. I just want the FLAC and the WAVs now. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, they exist. They exist.
What have you guys got in store for the future? Like, what's next for Holy Roar?
We have obviously got releases planned up through till, but we've definitely got things that we know are penciled in for next year.
Yeah.
So that's pretty wild. So yeah, you know, we are going to continue rolling as we have been doing probably for a couple of years now, 2-3 years now, where basically we try to focus ourselves on one release a month.
Yep.
Sometimes that gets skewed by possibilities to work with certain people or digital singles or digital EPs, for example. But yeah, we're going to continue rolling with our sort of like one release a month kind of model, because in terms of workload, that's feels like a good way to be sort of consistently active, consistently in the sort of public eye. But also it's good in terms of everyone who works for Holy Roar knows exactly what their workload is per month, kind of thing.
Yep.
And then just carry on trying to reach more people and do bigger and better things, because it's just a really, I mean this in the best possible way, it's just a really slow organic process where we've never gone like, oh, here's £20,000 for advertising, or let's go and like pay some mad radio plugger to try and get us huge radio coverage for something, you know. It's we will do things like that if that day ever came, when it's appropriate to the artist. But I mean, you know, we've got a store with Deathwish. They do our mail order for the US. We're just in the process of setting one up in Australia, actually, which should go live in the next week or so.
Yes.
That's with the guys who run Unified, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got a German store now. We've obviously got us running our own mail order. Japan, something we still really need to sort of like double down on and drill into as such. But yeah, we just want to sort of become more of a global entity so that our bands can sort of have opportunities to go and play in America and Australia and New Zealand and Japan and, you know, wherever, basically. Mm. So, I think our big sort of how we want to evolve over the next couple of years is to go from this UK label that does quite well in Germany and so on and so forth to being a label that if a kid's into Converge and he lives in Milwaukee, or if he lives in Auckland, or if he lives in Russia, then he should know who Holy Roar is, you know?
Yeah.
And I just use Converge as a sort of a totemic kind of example there, you know? So it's just about wanting as many people as possible who have the relevant musical interests to be aware of Holy Roar, you know, even if they don't like everything we do, you know?
Yeah. Do you think there's a ceiling for a label putting out such extreme music?
There is, but we're far from reaching it, I think.
Yeah.
I think we personally are far from reaching it. You know, you look at what bands like Def Heaven or Chelsea Wolfe have done.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chelsea Wolfe did a tour with A Perfect Circle over here. The Deftones in America took out Three Trap Tigers. I don't know if you're aware of that band.
Do they really?
Yeah, wow. They took them out on tour. So that's amazing. Deftones and Thrice, Three Trap Tigers. Like, Google it after this. But what I'm saying, like, that's obviously a touring thing.
Yep.
But what I mean is, you know, we're nowhere near as, like, we have no band as big as Converge. And I know that that's a once-in-a-generation thing. And we have no band as big as Neurosis. But I still think we've got a lot of room to grow in that kind of sense.
Yep.
But then also, I really think that the mainstream, and I'm talking in inverted commas there, has sort of definitely sort of shifted over the last few years as streaming has really taken hold, especially. I was going to say digital downloads, but it's definitely even more a thing with streaming. That a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old today be listening to Simple Plan or whoever today's equivalent is, and then in five clicks worked their way through punk and ended up at Napalm Death.
Yeah.
You know, so the knock-on effect of that is that, and likewise, they might listen to a Limp Bizkit song and then go to something else, and then, you know, go to Public Enemy and then end up at Scarlord, who's like this UK, like, rapper who just screams his fucking ass off and has loads of heavy guitars.
Yeah.
Like, so there's no genre boundaries anymore. Mm. So because of that, the mainstream has definitely sort of shifted its focus in various directions. And we have noticed, like, even in our little underground rock ghetto, we've noticed mainstream press or mainstream rock press, like, looking at us and championing our bands more, which didn't happen 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
I think that's a case of kids becoming more open-minded, and we're now in a time where just rehashing metalcore or pop punk emo forever for the sort of more mainstream rock crowd is just not going to cut it anymore. So, you know, people want something fresh and want something new. And I feel like, oddly, the mainstream has finally caught up with where we're at a little bit.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, I got a whiff of that seeing the response to Conjurer's record, Maya.
Yeah.
It was everywhere, on everything. And it was in all the top 10 lists. And so were a number of your other bands as well. But that in particular, I just noticed it plastered all over the show. And the response was crazy.
Yeah. And that was just people finding that record. You know, we obviously promoted it as well as we possibly could with the resources we had. But, you know, that band are now literally still on tour with Rivers of Nile.
Yeah.
If I've said that right, or Nihil. And then I know for a fact that they'll be going back out to the States later this year. And You know, I really think that they're laying the groundwork now to becoming, I hope, touch wood, fingers crossed, you know, I would like to see them become the next generation's Baroness, Gajira, Mastodon. You know, I think they fully have it within their capabilities if they make the right moves.
Yeah, me too. I think they're amazing.
Yeah, they're awesome. I mean, Brady's a total twat, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's pretty much it, I guess. Can you put forward an artist for the artist of the week?
Sure. I have become obsessed with a, well, sort of black metal band from Copenhagen called Morild. So it's spelled M-O-R-I-L-D.
Yep.
They've just released a record that's got a title that's in Danish and is so long, I couldn't tell you what it is. But they're kind of like lo-fi-ish, but then they have like these massive, huge, expansive sort of shoegazy bits and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But when they're intense, they're like really horrifyingly intense. But then they have these like hugely beautiful bits and quite almost doomy. They're very grandiose and very at one with nature and stuff. But
yeah,
I probably totally got them wrong now. But they're they're really fucking weird and they're really great. Yeah, cool. Morild.
Morild. Awesome, man. Yeah, thanks again, man.
No worries. Cheers.
And that's all for this episode. A huge thank you to Alex for being on the podcast and sharing so much with us. If you haven't checked out Holy Raw Records before, you're definitely missing out. Go to holyrawrecords.com and facebook.com/holyrawrecords, and you'll find a link to their Spotify in the show notes. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and share it with your mates. This podcast and the website musiciansmap.org is dedicated to sharing knowledge and advice about music and the music industry. It's all about community, honesty, and positive progress. The experiences, stories, and advice shared on the podcast are given freely with the hope that you can relate to them and benefit from them. If you've found this podcast enjoyable or useful, make sure to check out the Musicians Map ebook and audiobook about building success in music. You'll find it at musiciansmap.org/books, Amazon, and Audible. And buying a copy of the book directly contributes to the continuation of this podcast. There's also a free ebook, How to Get Your Music Heard. Go to musiciansmap.org/free-book to get your copy. If you have a suggestion for the podcast or for the YouTube channel, or you just want to get in touch and say hello, please do so via the Musicians Map Facebook group or by email at kane@musiciansmap.org. Thanks for listening and stay positive.